Hello, welcome to recording number 8 of Gairi Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. All right, I'm going to start with page number 56, where we left off. It is page 56 and paragraph 6. For Gord, the timing was right. Word came later that day. They were to leave their current base and return to Theobald's house. Every good man was needed there for a final confrontation, it seemed. They left immediately, after changing from Renee garb to their more mundane apparel. Entering Greyhawk from this area was no problem. Each paid his iron drab and passed through the great gate. Without difficulty, all 5 made the trek from the dock area to the foreign quarter. There they separated, agreeing that each would find his own way back to headquarters to avoid attracting attention in a group. Break. All right. Now we're given some information here about the setting itself. Now, again, and I say this every time, the City of Hawks map of the City of Greyhawk is what is being used here. If you have access to that, the readings directions make a little more sense. This is not the box set City of Greyhawk map. This is Gygax's own, and he did a very cursory drawing of it, but a very useful in the City of Hawks novel right at the beginning. All right, we're given a little more information here about the gates and something about the way the economy of Greyhawk is, the City of Greyhawk is working here, where an iron drab, a single iron drab, is going all that you need to pay to get through the Great Gate. Now, earlier, I believe there was mention that passing through gates cost some kind of money. So it isn't mentioned later because definitely if you are going to the foreign quarter, you're going to be passing through some gates into Old City. So that isn't mentioned here. Now, going from the docks where the Rennie are by Shacktown, where the Rennie were and where Gord was hiding, and the Rennie barge folk had several, like almost a dozen, I believe, barges tied together into a little Rennie community on the docks right there. Gord would be going through, I believe, either the river gate or the cargo gate, as was mentioned. I'm not quite sure where the great gate would be. I'm not sure if that's, and there we have up the City of Greyhawk map, but I'm not sure offhand where the Great Gate is. Now, that is a bit of a trek from the dock area to the foreign quarter, would be several miles. It might be as much as 3 or 4 miles from the docks to the foreign quarter. We're given a little more about what's going on in the Beggar Thief War, where they're being called back to base, and it seems like everyone is being called back to the Theobald's, the Beggar Union mansion there. So this Beggar Thief War is a matter of only a few weeks or a month, I assume, because from the previous context, it seemed that things had happened pretty quickly. I know that there was only 1 week when they had several encounters where they had killed several thieves in the Beggar Thief War. Maybe I'm assuming that, I can't remember offhand if it said that 3 weeks had passed. Maybe it's only been as little as a week, but I think it's closer to a month that's passed where Gord and the mercenaries are abusing the Rennie barge community there as their base of operations, and that the Rennie are actually in alliance with the Beggars Union and Theobald. All right, and again, we have mention of the iron drab, and if you're not familiar with that, It is the lowest form of coinage in the Gygax's City of Greyhawk. It had been said that in the slum quarter, 2 iron drab would get you enough food for, say, a poor dinner or maybe a dinner and a lunch. So that is a very small amount of money, but at the same time, there is something that can be purchased with it. So you would think that there might even be fractional currency. It was known that even currency that was consisted of coins, that some societies would cut the coins into halves or quarters, and you would get just part of a coin, even though that hadn't been minted as such, that it would later be cut into quarters to come up with a fractional currency. There's no mention of that in these books, but the iron drab, as low as that is, it still has some purchasing power in the City of Greyhawk. All right, we're not. I don't think there's anything else I can extract from here. All right, so I'm going to continue. It is page 56, paragraph 7. Mercenary stride never faltered as they passed through Black Gate into the old city, and the guards there never even looked up as they went by. Sian went in just as easily a few minutes later, and then Gord went last, after Sian had disappeared from his view. Despite the hostilities that had erupted, it was evident that those not obviously serving one side or the other were of no interest to anyone. Gord did not slow his step, emulating the fighters he had recently spent so much time with, for he felt himself as important now. He was coming home, more or less, to settle things. Break. All right. Well, there, like I had been saying, there are several gates in the city. And the Black Gate, I believe, is the gate between the slum quarter and the foreign quarter. So I'm not sure how they entered, or, you know, I'm a little off in the description here, whether it is, but they passed through the Black Gate into the old city. So I'm a little thrown by that, but
right. Neither of those gates, not the Great Gate nor the Black Gate, are on the map, of course.
Yeah, and the only thing is that the Black Gate was mentioned very early on, where Gord travels from the edge of the slum quarter into the foreign quarter.
Right.
And he mentions the Black Gate there, but that is an internal wall within the old city rather than an external wall leading to the old city. Because the foreign quarter is a quarter within old city.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying they passed through the Black Gate into the old city. So I'm a little confused. I don't know if Gygax has several Black Gates, whether any gate within the Black Wall is a Black Gate.
Because looking at the map, neither the slums nor the Beggar's Quarter directly connect to the foreign quarter.
All right. And he definitely had the slum quarter and the foreign quarter against each other, because Gord, although there's always a problem with the context, sometimes you don't know how much time has passed or distance. Mm-hmm. But early on, he definitely travels from the worst of the slum quarter very easily to the outer edge where the menial laborers are, and from there into the foreign quarter and the petit bazaar.
Right.
All right. And he mentions the Black Gate. So I'm not sure if he was a little confused here and he moved the Black Gate, because it is a very cool sounding name.
Yeah.
But I don't see it as an entrance to the old city, but an entrance within the old city to the foreign quarter. And that's something to just make note of, that, there are inconsistencies that are going to erupt, because we have very little context to work with until it builds up. And even then, we might find things that the context is inconsistent. And I kind of think that this is an inconsistency, but we'll see later on, not only in this book, But when we do eventually get to City of Hawks, we'll be thinking about this book, because City of Hawks is kind of a rewrite of this story when Gygax went into the his new publishing company. And so it's like a reintroduction, and it does do more information within that book. I believe it's a bigger book. I think more and differing information about Theobald, and the early days with Gord, and also the structure of the City of Greyhawk.
On the City of Greyhawk map, well, on Malden's map, the Black Gate connects the old city to the new city.
All right, that makes sense from this perspective.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense from the very earliest mention with right. the slum quarter and the foreign quarter.
Or from Gary's map.
I like to think that the Black Gate is a wall, is a gate within the old city wall, because it's a very cool sounding name.
It's called the Black Wall.
Yeah. Black Wall and the Black Gate. I think it was the Black Gate that was mentioned. We can, yes. I can listen back or look back at a later time. Maybe I'm mistaken. But I believe the earlier mention was the Black Gate in the, from the slum quarter to the foreign quarter. Or maybe it just said it was a gate in the Black Wall, and I assumed it was the Black Gate, but we'll have to look into that. Now, the other thing with this section right here that I notice is that we have the view of this Beggar Thieves Guild War, where it really is kind of going a little sub rosa beneath the notice of the common citizen or the guards or the watch. They don't seem to be heavily involved in it. But I would say that more that the watch at least would be taking a blind eye rather than being unaware of what's going on. I would think that, as mentioned before, that the rulers of Greyhawk, the head of the Merchants Guild, and even the common people, they don't think it's a bad thing to see the beggars and thieves whittled down a little bit. We see here again that Gord learns from those around him. And the way he's emulating the fighters is the way that he has learned to take up a position of authority by emulating the authority figures in the beggars union. And where earlier on it was shown that he use their phrases and the way that they, you know, the way he talked to San was very much in the way, or Hottie, who was the very young beggar thief who was 7 or 8, was very much in keeping with the way that Fergo, the instructor, had talked to him. And here we also have that the hostilities, they are not taking it into a wider war. And obviously, since this is a very close fighting kind of thing, we're not getting a little many side casualties here. So the common citizen doesn't seem to be drawn up in this unless they're allied to one faction or another, like the peddler, you know, who is allied with the beggars union. And him as a casualty isn't the same as some poor shopkeeper or regular citizen getting cut down. All right, I'm going to restart right here. We are on page 56, the final paragraph. The northernmost section of the Thieves' Quarter was the locale controlled by the Beggars' Union. The Beggars' territory actually spilled over into the Slum Quarter. Gord avoided that area, assuming that it would be watched closely. Would attract little attention where the Thieves Guild felt secure. He reasoned, so he strode up Haven Street and turned left on Red Cobbles Lane, not bothering to avoid anyone. Sooner or later, though, he would have to pass through the area between the opposing headquarters. When Gord turned north and began to follow Cleaver, a street that passed near Theobald's domain, he was accosted. Break. All right. Well, This actually answers a little question I'd been having earlier. Was it had seemed that they had mentioned that Theobald's headquarters was within the thieves' quarter. Now, if we get back to looking at that map from City of Hawks, I'm pretty sure there was a beggar's quarter, wasn't there? But I thought there was. But now we have...
Yes, there is.
Okay, so I thought there was a beggar's quarter, but that's just that map. Now, between this book and City of Hawks, Gygax may have altered the map, or he may not have. He may have thought that the beggar's quarter was just, you know, it just seems there's a thieves' quarter, there's a beggar quarter, there's a slum quarter. Now, it makes sense, would make a little more sense to think that Theobald would be in the beggar's quarter. But here it definitely says that Theobald's mansion... and that section of the thieves' quarter is controlled by the beggars' union, and not as something that has been won in conquest in this war, but that's the way it always was. And then we have three more street names, and I believe all of them can be tied to the thieves' quarter. Haven Street, and we know that it connects to Red Cobbles Lane. Now, we don't have a good picture of street-by-street Greyhawk, but if you wanted to go further, you know, and develop things, here you have two interconnected streets. There's not really much information except the name and that there is a connection, that one is connected directly to the other, Haven Street and Red Cobbles Lane. Now,
yeah, Malden, once again, has a streets map. I can post it, but it's not the same as the City of Hawks map. In most maps, there's only slums and thieves' quarter. Most maps, except for Gary's that I've seen, don't have a beggar's quarter.
The beggar quarter and
the slums and all the other ones.
There is no mention, I think, so far of a beggar's quarter. Mm-hmm. It always seems to be slum and thieves. And, that could be, and here, obviously, he's saying that that there is no beggar's quarter. There is the thieves' quarter and the slum quarter that the beggar's union has control over. Now, we do have a mention of Cleaver Street. And Cleaver, we know, is to the north. When Gord turned north off of, we don't know where, that it is also a street that is near... to the domain of the beggars. Now that would be in the thieves' quarter, but not necessarily close to where the beggars' union hall is, because I remember from mention of the workhouse that the mansion, I believe, was on the edge of that quarter. Which would, you know, it might be that the edge of the quarter in the mansion is also close to a section of the thieves' quarter controlled by the thieves, but it also may be at some distance. We don't have a good idea of distance from Gygax's map. Yeah, see, now that was the early, you see the black wall, and he's got Red Cobbles and Cleaver. So he's assuming... that Cleaver is right off of Red Cobbles, but I think that is an assumption because it does not say it. Because what it says is that Haven and Red Cobbles are connected, but it does not say that if Gord could have left Red Cobbles. All it says is that he turned north and began to follow Cleaver. It doesn't say that he turned north from Red Cobbles. And there's so much missing information that, you know, it really doesn't mean necessarily that. I also see that he has Killcat Lane there within this quarter. But I believe Killcat Lane, from the description, should be through the slum quarter. I think Killcat Lane should be that lane in the menial laborers who were at the edge of the slum quarter. Then there's the black wall. And I think that this is a mistake there. I also, like I said, I think saying that Cleaver, and you could call it Cleaver Street, even though it's only called Cleaver, it said Cleaver A Street. I don't know if the name is Cleaver Street, because Red Cobbles Lane is a street. But it is, you know, it's a lane called a lane, but it could also be generically called a street. I'd say it's easily enough to say that it is Cleaver Street. But I don't agree necessarily that it's connected like that to Red Cobbles Lane. That would be, though, the edge of where the beggars main in the Thieves Quarter starts. Nor, you know, not on Cleaver, but near it. All right. He mentions that he felt that the Thieves Guild would feel secure in their area. So in Gord's estimation, in this beggar Thieves Guild war, makes you feel that the thieves are not really worried about what's going on. I know it's just a little bit there, but from what Gord has been saying previously, and that little mention right there, I just get the feeling that in Gord's estimation, that things do not look good for the Beggars Union. All right, I'm going to restart. And we are on page 57, paragraph 2. "Hold it there, laddie," a voice said. A thin, black-clad fellow stepped out of a nearby doorway, hand on sword. He eyed Gord suspiciously. Gord didn't feel intimidated at all. It surprised him a bit, for he still had memories of his gutless days. "What do you want?" he inquired firmly. "I want to know what you think you're doing, strolling around in a battle zone. Don't you know that this is the boundary between the thieves' territory and those dirty beggars yonder?" It was more of a warning than a challenge. Break. All right. Not so much the information, a little more about how this is the boundary. And it just seems like the battle zone is more in the beggars' area. But he is being said he's in a battle zone and not crossed over yet. But he's on the edge of the territory of the Beggars Union. It does mention so that Gord is self-aware of how much he's changed. But according to this, it can't be more than half a year since he was Gord the Gutless. And there's been monumental changes in Gord's character since that time. Gord went into combat absolutely from between the time he was wetting his pants at the threat from Snaggle of the Headsman's Gang in the slum quarter to where he's going into open fight against the group of thieves and actually kills the one in the outside the, what was that, the Wheel of Gold?
Mm-hmm. On the strip.
On the strip. It is a really a big changes have really come. And here we are seeing that Gord himself is a little surprised at how much he has changed. And he really has become, at heart, a different person than he was the 12-year-old orphan boy, Gord the Gutless, to the 13-year-old lesser master of the Beggars Union. Okay. Now let's see. There's just a mention that the black clad fellow. So the Thieves Guild obviously is watching the area and is as Gord fought, looking for anyone trying to aid the beggars or come into the area. But as a warning, he obviously doesn't think that little Gord, who's still a very small 13-year-old, looks like he's anybody who is a threat to the thieves. So he's obviously not dressed here. He's back into the dress of a young boy, but not a young boy beggar. And so he's out of the Rene garb, like they said earlier. And he's dressed now as a young boy, as San and Gord had been when they first entered the strip. All right, I am going to restart, and we are on page 57, and this is paragraph 4. Oh, I'm sorry, it is paragraph 5. Dressed as he was, Gord could have been an apprentice thief, some ally, or just about anything except a beggar. Gord certainly didn't want to cause a scene. Who knew what backup this sentry might have? Sure, he said. I've heard about the trouble. I thought I would take a look to see for myself how badly we frightened him. Broad daylight and armed. Sir Gord patted his side where his belt knife was secured. None of those feeble cowards would dare bother me. Cocky bastard, ain't you? The man retorted. Looked closely at Gord and added, "Where are you from, anyway?" "Who the hell appointed you my master?" Gord spat back. He found himself actually incensed at this fellow's questioning. "I go where I choose, and need no permission from you." At that, the sentry laughed. Before him was a youngster of tender years and scant size, armed with a knife no bigger than that which the thief used to eat his joint of beef, daring him to contest his passage. All right, well, we have not really much more in the atmosphere or the information about the Thieves Beggar Guild War, Beggar Union War. We do have that that it seems to be that they do hold them in disregard, the thieves. And then we have a little description of Gord. We've got that, you know, we see he's being seen and in his dress. And as I had mentioned, he's not dressed as a thief, as a beggar, but definitely as somebody, an apprentice or even a young thief. So in that, and his new self-confidence, where he can stand up to a position of authority and snap back at it, to a person in position of authority, that here we're told that he looks like a small youngster armed with a tiny knife and still very, very much self-possessed and not very much in control of his situation there. So Gord, it's really showing how Gord has changed. And 57 pages in right here, we see that Gord has already changed very much from his early days. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 57, last paragraph. Well, you're no beggar anyway. If you want to get to your, page turn here, throat slit, it's your affair, bandy boy. Have at it. With that, the fellow retreated into his doorway, and Gord passed by without giving him another glance. Although the area immediately beyond looked deserted, Gord felt a prickling sensation at scalp and spine when he passed gaping doorways and empty windows. There were eyes watching him, he knew. Then, a couple of blocks farther north, the streets began to show some signs of life again. Not much, but here and there a figure was out walking, a handcart being pushed, some tiny shops still open and doing business. All told, however, this portion of the quarter was virtually closed. If this dearth of economic activity was any indication, Theobald and his associates were in deep trouble. Break. All right, now again, I'd said earlier that it seemed like the common people really weren't being affected by the Beggar Union Thieves Guild War, but here, getting into the beggar's territory, Gord stepped into that invisible border between Thieves Guild and Beggar's Union, and immediately the area is, empty. And then only a very small sign of activity the closer he's getting to the heart of the Beggar's Union. And Gord again looks at this and thinks that there is a lot of trouble brewing and that the Beggar's Union is not winning this war. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 58, paragraph 3. As he thought about the impressions that this scene was creating in his mind, Gord realized that he no longer considered himself one of Theobald's servants. True, he was still officially bound to that fat creature who commanded the army of beggars, and in fact he was now on his way to report to Theobald. Still, Gord knew that he was now something more than a tool of the beggar master. Abruptly, six young toughs appeared before Gord, breaking his thoughts. Now, as he had expected, he would have to contend with the sentries in the employ of the beggars' union. The leader of the group swaggered up to him, hands on hips, and surveyed him. Gord knew that he had been a full-grown man with a longsword at his hip. Gord knew that had he been a full-grown man with a longsword at his hip, six never would have shown themselves, unless they could have ambushed with rocks from above. Now they felt confident that they had an easy prize. "Take me to Theobald and be quick about it," Gord ordered before the chief bully had spoken. The fellow's mouth dropped open at that, then clamped shut. "Screw you, you little pimp. Who in the hell you giving orders to?" "You fool," Gord replied. "I'm Master Gord of the Beggars' Union. My orders are taken directly from the beggar master. Now either accompany me to the headquarters of Theobald, or get out of my path. I don't care which you do. Unless you act quickly, you'll regret it." Gord had all he could do to suppress a smile as he watched the spectrum of expressions that passed across the young tough's countenance. Astonishment, fury, fear, and uncertainty paraded openly before Gord's gaze, as plainly as if the words themselves had been written on the oaf's forehead. "How in hell do I know that you ain't a spy for them thieves?" the leader finally asked, groping for some way to gain the verbal advantage. Although his five associates had crowded closer behind him during the exchange, their proximity did not reassure him, and his tone of voice now contained a tinge of whining. Gord felt like calling him an asshole, threatening him further, and making all six of them sweat some more. How often had he had to suffer the humiliation of fear and cowardice? But instead, he simply said, "Take me to Theobald, and if I am a spy, he'll deal with me." When the leader heard those words and saw the hard-eyed stare that accompanied him, he broke. "Ah, you're okay. I just had a check, see? Them's my orders." By the time these last words were out of the sentry's mouth, Gord had already marched around the group and continued on his way. His lips curled into a satisfied smile as he heard the leader's final plaintive cry, "Tell Master Theobald that Bugbear and his boys is doing a good job, okay?" Break. All right, well, we're mostly giving more here about Gord's character and, you know, really showing how much he's developed, because we have him encountering another one of these street gangs, and this one is seemingly composed of older toughs, not just the headsman, whose I believe oldest member was that 18-year-old. So here we have a group of tough gang. We have them named Bugbear and his boys, although not really a gang name. But we have Gord facing them down. So that is a big thing there. Then we also have, if you're running the Beggars Union, and you're running a Beggars Union Thieves Guild war, we have some information about how the two have their setup. We have that little group of toughs as the sentries on the Beggars Union side, and on the Thieves Guild side, we have somebody who seems a lot more experienced and probably an experienced thief, and a lot more tough. And then these easily intimidated tough gang of street toughs. We have a way here, maybe being shown how somebody could easily infiltrate the area around the Beggars Union, that these are, the sentries there are oafs rather than anybody of, you know, really great intelligence. So probably easily victims of charm and or just being outsmarted by characters. All right, we're given a little information about the distance between the edge of the Thieves Guild Beggars, Beggars Union in the Thieves Quarter, that there's the boundary, and Gord is having to move further and further away. So more than likely that the headquarters of the Beggars Union is a little bit of a distance, at least, from the edge of the Thieves Guild-controlled area of the Thieves Quarter. All right, I'm going to restart. We are on page 59, and we're starting with paragraph 6. In stark contrast to the rest of the neighborhood Gord had seen, the area around Theobald's place was a beehive of activity. He was in sight of his destination, slowly strolling along. Gord was taken aback to see a squad of the watch parade past in the street off to his side, and even more surprised to see a group of city officials entering the building. What was happening? He stayed back to observe more, and was soon further mystified by the sight of several of the beggars he knew openly entering and leaving the place. This was not at all what he expected. To be on the safe side, Gord went carefully around the area, checking everything out. The whole place was filled with the same sort of activity, open comings and goings, and many important-looking folk mingling with the beggars and their ilk, all under the aegis of a group of the watch. All right, well, break right here. And we've got quite a bit different of what's going on. Now, we don't know if Theobald's being taken to task, but we definitely have people who Gord recognizes as city officials going into the Thieves Guild mansion and being guarded by the watch and a patrol of the watch. So, obviously, it is quite well known among those in power that this warfare is going on. Like had been earlier mentioned, it was something that was not looked about as a terrible thing for the Beggars Union Thieves Guild War. Gord is in this area. Of course, he is a master, least master of the Beggars Union, and by people who are beggars probably known. So, it isn't safe to say that if your characters wanted to infiltrate the area, that they could just walk, if they got past the sentry, that they could just walk into an active area. But it is safe enough for Gord. It does tell you again how if you're running this as a campaign, that you could set up, you have the area where there's a no man's land and then sentries within the Beggars Union area, and then the closer you get to the heart, to the Beggars Union Hall, Theobald's mansion, that you're going to see quite a lot of activity, not normal activity, but quite a lot of activity going on. And then also the reverse, that it is not the normal way for things to happen, that the beggars would not be going into the mansion openly, that there would be a lot of subterfuge normally and not this more direct approach that is happening right now because of the warfare. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 59, and it is the last paragraph. Gord decided to make his way into the headquarters by means of a secret underground passage that began in a building a bowshot distance from the place. He was not about to take any unnecessary chances despite the seeming security. Nobody was in the hidden subcellar of the house when he entered, and Gord moved quickly through the place and up onto the main floor. There was action there aplenty, with beggars and their allies coming and going. Fergo noticed Gord approached him briskly, clapped him on the back, and congratulated him for the success of his group's mission. Like, all right. Now, you know, here we have, I think, the most important note is that there's a secret passage. It's described, you know, in at least enough detail to know that it's in a house across the street, and that it goes to the hidden sub-cellar of the house where the secret passage is located. So there's a hidden, within that house, you have to know where to go to look to find the hidden sub-cellar. And there you quickly can cross over on to the main floor of the Thieves' Mansion. The Beggars' Union Mansion.
I think that's the way they made their way out when they were heading up to the Strip. And they saw that clerically enhanced light first.
I'm not sure. Well, I know there is a sub-cellar in the mansion of the Beggars' Union, Theobald's mansion.
Right.
This seems to be a sub-cellar in the house. And it doesn't talk about going to the sub-cellar in the mansion, but to the main floor.
Right.
Also, when they went that long distance, they weren't in the sub-cellar of the mansion. They crossed over into the sewer system because they made note of the nature, the flammable, toxic nature of the gases within the sewer. Okay.
So they couldn't have a regular open flame.
Yes, so there is at least. Now, there's also, I believe, a secret passage that led to a house where they got went into the garden quarter that went under the old city wall. Yeah. So there seems to be a little warren, which isn't unexpected, but it certainly does add something to the locale and the map and the idea of the Beggars Union. And I always get the feeling that the Beggars Union and even the Thieves Guild, they're much more into subterfuge, doing disguises and painting on stuff and just basically there's a lot of illusion and subterfuge going on with both the Beggars Union and with the Thieves Guild. And there's also this sense that the people who are more experienced have an ability of discernment to be able to see through, like Gord recognized the thief, Fergo and Clyde the Sharper recognized the markings of disease that were fake on Gord originally, and Theobald. So there's the sense that people in power, who have experience, that they're able to see through disguises. Mm-hmm. It's not mentioned. It just seems to be in the background there. And so as we're looking right here, we see a little more description of what's going on in the active Thieves Guild Beggar Union War. And also that Gord has, as Fergo, who's one of the masters and instructor, as he congratulates Gord, that, again, Gord is very high in their estimations.
It kind of strikes me as odd that when he goes into the sub-cellar, it's completely unguarded. I mean, he just goes in.
Yes, and that could be a major flaw showing in the in how that despite having the show of power and having success with the mercenaries and stuff, that there are fatal flaws to Theobald's thinking,
right,
that he would leave an entrance just because it is supposedly unknown. He would leave an entrance into the main floor of the Beggars Union completely, as far as we know, unguarded. We don't know if it wasn't. It could be trapped, it could be guarded, but right, it isn't really mentioned or anything. So we're going a lot by Gord's estimations.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to restart right here. We are on page 60, and this is paragraph 3. Master Theobald's strategy was perfect, Fergo exclaimed. And Ladov Id Norsi was the key to our success, he continued. The other teams met with mixed results. We lost a couple and took several other thieves prisoners. Even killed a far lot of them, too. What's happening now? Gord asked. With Inorsi and the others in the bag, exclaimed Fergo. The master called for a truce. Both sides are still armed and waiting, but we're negotiating a settlement now. What are the watch and the city officials doing here? His lordship the mayor doesn't want the warfare to continue, and that's a fact. Who knows what old rivalries would come up if it did. His emissaries told us that to avoid a possible division of the city into warring factions, they'd mediate the dispute and make certain that the Thieves Guild settled things on terms just for both sides. Something rang false in this explanation. It sounded like something Fergo had rehearsed, or someone else's words that he was repeating. What could Gord say? At best he was a youngster, even if he was a leased master, and a relatively successful servant of Theobald. Fergo and a score of others here outranked him, not only in status, but in age and experience. He did not openly question or contest what Fergo had told him, feeling that this was the truth as far as Fergo knew it to be. Break. All right. Now, the key thing that strikes me here, besides, there's, you know, some information on the Thieves Guild Beggars Union War, but it's the fact that Gord immediately is that sense of discernment that even though he's being told good things for the Beggars Union, he's not more than distrustful. He's really getting a feeling that something isn't right here. So again, there is that sense that there's an ability to discern among people, and especially someone like Gord, that it is one of his skills, is being able to see through, whether it's a con game or just even false words, that he is able to see through, probably because of intelligence or wisdom, that he's able to see through to what is true and what is not true. Now, here we have the involvement again. Ladov Indorsi is a high member of the Thieves Guild, who was mentioned earlier as and one of Gord's first success, because Gord is the one who captured him. And as we see, that is the most important, and that Gord had the best success out of all the other teams. Now, we also learn that Fergo and a score of others here outranked him. So the size of the Beggars Union, that we have over 20, over 20 members of the Beggars Union are masters, and that kind of speaks to a very, probably a very large size group that's going on. We're very rarely giving specifics. We know that there is a group of beggar thieves being trained, the elite. We know that there are several dozen people staying at the mansion, and those would be the higher, the better skilled, or even the lower trainees of the Beggars Union who had to go out and beg and thief and turn everything over to Theobald. And then within them, there is the elite who are being trained as beggar thieves, like Gord and San and Hadi and Violet had been. Here then we have what's going on with the city. Now, I mean, that is a very important thing as far as getting the atmosphere and the idea of how the city is run, that the mayor is going to be, that the Beggars Union and the Thieves Guild both hold some kind of standing enough for the mayor and the watch not to just come down on them, but to act as emissaries and neutrals and going to help mediators to the dispute. So it says that the Thieves Guild doesn't run the city. It says that the Beggars Union and Theobald has to have some kind of standing within the city. And it does. It does say quite a bit about the structure of the city of Greyhawk that's implied here. But still, like most things, it's very open and undetailed. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 60 and... paragraph 9. I'm heading for the audience room now to report. If he has time, I'll see if Theobald wishes you to appear. Get something to eat, and I'll be back in a few minutes. So saying, Fergo turned and scurried off to see the head of the Union. It seemed a good idea that. Ward was feeling peckish, and something from the kitchens might not hurt, even if the stuff was slop. Better something than nothing. It'd come a long way, Gord thought, recalling how a rat-sullied chunk of grease-coated bread had once seemed a feast to him, and how that vegetable swill had seemed to be nectar and ambrosia when he had first eaten in the beggar's master's kitchen. Things had changed. Nobody was in the kitchen, so Gord helped himself to the best provisions he could find. Cheese, a fatty sausage of scant size, and a stale bun. No wonder the place was empty. It certainly didn't have much to offer. After finishing the meager meal and waiting for a half hour, Gord decided that Fergo would find him if the beggar master commanded his presence. So Gord headed for the upper loft. He said hello to some of the apprentices who were loafing around there, and then went to his own quarters. He was hardly surprised when a brief inspection revealed him that someone had searched the place in his absence. Everything had been put back in its place, so he supposedly wouldn't notice. Whoever had done the job hadn't discovered that he'd set things up just so as to be aware of rifling. Hair placed here, a strand of cobweb there, had been displaced. Ward decided to check his cache of money, not in the least worried that it had been disturbed. He pulled the old crate that served as his table and dresser over to an empty corner of the room, stood upon it, and removed a splinter from the rafter overhead. The beam was old and dry, and the piece had been loose when he was assigned to the room. Gord had carefully worked it free and used his knife to gouge a space behind it, a place large enough to hold a handful of coins. Being more careful still, he had used the blade to drill and peg the beam in the splinter. When he replaced the broken piece, it stayed firmly in place, and his most careful scrutiny satisfied Gord that nobody would guess that the piece could be taken off without breaking it. Inside he had first stored his few brass bits. Now the trove held far more than that. Gord took out the coins quickly, replaced the chunk, and moved the crate back where it belonged. He added the bronzes, copper commons, silver nobles, and one shining silvery gold electrum lucky, the purse. He had tucked under his belt. It clinked against the pair of coins and the ring he already had in there. He stretched out on the lumpy cot, relaxed, waited for his summons, and dozed off. Break. All right. Now, again, we have a little bit about the currency. Now, I know there's much more here about Gord and his room, but to me, as something that affects the overall campaign, we have the gold electrum lucky. Now, I would say that we're moving up, and here we have bronzes, copper commons, silver nobles, and the gold electrum lucky. So the lucky is the next piece, next level of currency. Now, there's no information given about the breakdown, you know, nothing like saying 10 nobles, 20 nobles to the electrum. We don't know how it breaks down. We just have iron drabs, we have brass bits, bronzes, copper commons, silver nobles, and now the gold electrum lucky. And so we have a very wide amount of coinage in levels of currency, levels of value in the city of Greyhawk. Now, that doesn't necessarily reflect anywhere else in the Flaness. Other cities, they may not have anywhere near the number of different kinds of coins being used in the city of Greyhawk, or they might. but it just is, it's very interesting. This is a lot more than you normally hear, like say in where we, you know, this we've already reached quite a few different levels of coinage right here. All right. Then we get back to, we have Gord. His, you know, his naivete is kind of removed, but I would expect he had hidden that little box with the two iron drabs back at the beginning of the story. So this is not uncommon or a new development that Gord would find a secure place to hide his little hoard of coins. And it is, for someone so successful, it is a very small amount. And I think that looking at things a little in larger in a gaming aspect, that if you keep the coins and the magic items and such very low at the beginning of the game, that creates a better experience than just letting the players have a lot of coin and a lot of magic things right at the, because you can never get back to it. You can try to remove it later on, but if you start out to where in a campaign where it is hard to get coin, where it is hard to get magic items, I think it is a makes for a better, longer lasting campaign. All right, now let's see. I am going to restart. It is on the next page. Excuse me here. I'm a hard time have with these pages. And we're going to be on page, going to restart page number 62. And it is going to be at the first paragraph. We have, Gord, always a light sleeper, came awake instantly at the sound of a noise he did not know. What was it? The old building was full of noises. It creaked and settled by itself. There were always other noises, too. The voices and comings and goings of the many beggars who stayed here. But what had awakened him was something else. There, again, it was a muffled thud from the chamber next to his. The wall between was thin, and Gord could hear more faint sounds through it now. It sounded unmistakably like a near silent struggle to Gord, and he reacted swiftly, hoisting himself up soundlessly to the rafter above his cot. Then a furtive step outside his door told him that his decision had been wise. From his perch on the rafter, Gord watched the door. The latch moved quietly upward, and the portal swung inward with barely a creak. The dim light of the guttering tallow candle on the crate glinted off the reddened point of a sword. The hand and arm that held the blade swiftly followed it inside. Gord saw a leather-armored man scan the room quickly, noted the rumpled cot, and the apparently empty room. The swordsman stepped in, felt the place where Gord had dozed only moments before, and grinned evilly. He stepped back from the bed, stooped, and thrust the short bloody weapon into the place under the bed, where he imagined a frightened beggar thief was hiding. As he did so, Gord pounced. The force of his fall sunk the long dagger Gord held before him through the thick hide of the padding, so that its full length buried itself into the would-be killer's back, just beneath his left shoulder blade. Gord's weight and the momentum behind his plunge felled the fellow as if he'd been poleaxed. As he flattened on the floor with a woofing noise, the tip of the dagger bit into the wood and pinned him to the floor. This foe was a tough one, no run-of-the-mill thief, to be sure. Without outcry, the man tried to turn and get at the weight on his back, but the dagger held him immobile long enough for Gord to take out his second weapon, a short knife, and strike again. His wild swing slashed the killer's right forearm as the fellow tried to ward off the blow. The wound caused him a gasp and reflexively drop his sword. Gord tossed away his shorter blade, and by lunging out and away from the man's body, managed to snatch up the invader's weapon, even as the man freed himself from the floor. Guard was up and attacking again. Third time was the charm. Sword rose and fell twice more before Gord was satisfied that the enemy was finished. Had he not taken him totally unawares, and then had him pinned down, Gord knew that the man would have slain him. Gord was shaking and sweat-covered. He stood absolutely silent, holding his breath. Had anyone heard the fight? Was another murderer coming? No footsteps indicated this, and no outcry arose. Whatever was going on, apparently no one but Gord knew about it. With actions born more of instinct than intention, Gord searched the body of the dead thief. There were a few coins in the man's girdle, and Gord pocketed them without thinking. He returned his knife to its sheath on his right hip, drew out the great dagger, wiped it clean, and replaced it in the sheath between his shoulder blades. Finally, he took the belt and scabbard from the corpse. The belt was too large for his slender waist, but he used it as a hanger, slinging it over his right shoulder, and sheathed the sword on his left hip. Softly, Gord crept from his room and into the unlit corridor beyond to discover what was going on. All right. Now, here we have an action scene, and there's a little bit of information about what's going on in the Beggars Union Thieves, obviously a major turning point. And as Gord says, this is not just some common tough. This is an experienced thief or an experienced fighter, more than likely a thief because of the leather armor, I'd say, and the use of, I believe it was said, a short sword. Now, here we have an example of perhaps like the most important things, that if you are describing combat in D&D, it is a very cursory simulation of combat. And here we have a novel form how you're physically describing what a fight and somebody with multiple hit points. Gord isn't able to kill him with one blow, even what seemingly a critical backstab hit or a very powerful one that goes through the armor, pins him to the floor. Also, then we have Gord having to slash his arm and two or three more strikes, twice more with the short sword that Gord's picked up. So we have a fight here, and perhaps what you might describe is how the hit points work, how they're described in a novel form. A fight against an individual with many hit points is simply that they can avoid, they can parry, they can knock away blows, they can use up energy doing that, and perhaps hit points if that's the way you strike them, or that they're a reflection of physical damage. And here Gord has at least four physical strikes, one very severe against that. Definitely a dead thief. Gord searched the body of the dead thief. So here we have an experienced thief and Gord recognizing that this is obviously somebody who is more dangerous than himself, because he's thinking that he could not have won this fight without the advantage of that first backstab. All right. Now, we have also an example again here of Gord's ability that he immediately, on that sound, he is able to recognize what it indicates and react to it. And react to it in a very positive way by climbing up and being prepared to fight rather than trying to hide under the bed, which would seem to be a ridiculous reaction to a threat like this. And then again, also that the thief coming in is experienced enough to know that the Gord couldn't have gotten out, that the bed is still warm, and realizes that Gord has to be in the room somewhere. He just made the bad choice of fighting under the bed. Have the typical thing of thieves leaving, wearing leather, padded leather armor, armed with short sword and dagger. But at that, I think that generally covers what is going to be extracted from these paragraphs. So it is now 7:04 already, and I am going to end today's recording and hopefully see everybody for recording number 9, which should be tomorrow. And if you want to look up on the Cannon Fire website, the earlier recordings are archived there.